Hilchas Gzela Vaveda, the laws of theft and of lost objects, Perek Asiri, the 10th chapter. This chapter is the final one dealing with the laws of Gzela, and after this we will be dealing with the laws of Aveda, of lost objects. This chapter again deals with the laws of stolen land and land that has been used without permission of the owner. Perek Asiri, the 10th chapter, Halacha Aleph. This halacha, as well as the next two, deal with the law of a non-Jew who has taken a field or a house from a Jew. As we learned in yesterday's perek, if someone steals land from another person and then sells it to someone else, the buyer has no right to the field. That land always remains in the possession of the original owner. Therefore, if Reuben has a field and Shimon steals it, and later on sells this field to Levi, Levi has no right to the field, and Reuben can take back the field and doesn't have to pay Levi any money at all. Levi will get his money back from Shimon, the thief. However, he has no right to this field whatsoever. Let's say a non-Jew has stolen the field, has taken the field from Reuven. There are different reasons he could have done so. It could be that he has a right to the field. It could be the Jew owns the goy money. That could be one reason. And in that case, when he stole the field, he has a right to the field. And therefore, we should not penalize the one that the goy sold it to. Let's say the goy sells it to a Jew. This Jew has a right to the field. However, if the goy stole the field, what is going to be the situation when somebody buys the field from the goy? Is he going to have to give it back to the Jew? Because he will not be able to recover his money. The Gemara discusses the case of the Sikrikin. Sikrikin was the name given to the Romans who used to take away fields and houses from the Jewish people by threatening to kill them if they did not give them the fields. These three halachas over here will deal with the cases of how we determine whether the guy has taken the field legally or not, and what do we do if he has taken it illegally. Halacha Aleph. Goy Baal Zreya, a very strong non-Jew, Sha'anas Nichsi Yisrael, who has forcibly taken possessions of a Jew, the Yared L'Sich Sadeyu, and he has gone to the field of the Jew in order to take possession. Why has he done so? The guy claims that he has done so for one of the following reasons. Machmes Shehoyu Loi Chayv Al Bala Sodeh, either because he has a debt that the owner of the field, the Jew, owes him, or a second reason, Oy Machmes Shehoyu Loi Nezik Biyad Zeh Yisraeli, because there is a damages which the Jew owes him. The Jew did some damage to him and owes him money, and as a result, the goy takes his field. Or a third reason, or because the possessions of the Jew have damaged those of the goy. For example, the Jew has a cow or an ox, and the ox has done damage to the property of the goy. The goy, in order to regain his financial loss, takes the field from the Jew. And after he has forcibly taken control over the field, the goy has sold the field to another Jew. As we mentioned in the last perek, normally if someone steals a field and sells to someone else, the new buyer has no right to the field. It is still the possession of the original owner, and therefore he has no right to it. It goes back to the original owner. But in this case, the original owner has no right to take this field away from the possession of the buyer. Since in this case, apparently, the guy has a reasonable claim, that he claims that the money is owed him anyway, that is not really called theft. The guy is not considered a thief. When he has taken the land, he has done so basically legally. Maybe he should have gone to court, but he has not taken it totally without giving any payment. And therefore, when he sells it to the Jew has a right to the field now. However, as we see now in Halacha Beis, we must have some determination that the goy's words are correct. When does this apply? That the Jew who has bought the field from the goy has a right to the field? When we have some proof that the goy is correct. The first possibility is that the original owner admits that the claim of the goy who stole the field and then sold it is a valid claim. When the goy claims that the yid owes him money or that the yid damaged him or so on, the original owner admits that it's true. So therefore we know that the goy did something legal. Or a second possibility, or Jewish witnesses, valid witnesses, have testified that the guy's claim is a valid one. The guy who has sold the field, stolen it, and then sold it. Not really stolen it, since he has a right to it, according to the witnesses. He has sold it to the Jew. The guy's claim was a valid one. We have witnesses for it. This is a second possibility. Or we have a third possibility. There are no witnesses, and the owners don't admit. But we can figure out from the circumstance that the guy's claim is correct. For how do we know that the guy's claim is correct? Let's say there was a king or a ruler in that particular country, in that particular place, who would be able to force this guy to a court case, the guy who sold the field. So in that case, if the Jew claims that the guy stole the field from him, he has a valid legal alternative. He can take the guy to court. There's a king there, or a ruler, who will force, if the guy is stolen from the Yid, he can force the guy to give the field back. However, the original owner never made a claim against the guy. In any of these three cases, these are the cases when the original owner is not allowed to take the field back from the one that brought to the guy. And in the third case, even though the owner doesn't admit to the guy's claim, the guy says he owes him money, but the owner does not admit it. And even though there are no witnesses that say that the guy's claim was a true one. If there are no witnesses and he doesn't admit, why should we believe that the guy was right? The one that bought from the guy can say to the original owner, "In gazlin hu agoy, if this guy was a thief, loma lo tavata maisei b'dineihem, how come you didn't enter a complaint against him in their laws, in their courts, in the goyish courts? Since there was a melech oisar, there was a king or a ruler who had the power to force this guy to give the land back to the Jew. The fact that the original owner did not take this guy to court is a proof enough for us that the guy's claim was a true claim, and the Yid must have owned the guy money. And therefore, when the guy sells to another Yid, the second one can claim that I bought it from him in confidence that he took it from you legally. Because if it had been illegal, naturally you would have taken him to court. Therefore, in any of these cases, the one that bought from the guy has the total rights to the field. However, now in Halacha Gimel, we will mention the case when this is not true, when we normally suspect that the guy has taken away the field from the Yid by force. And this is the Sikrikin, as we mentioned, the Goyim that the Gemara refers to at the time of the Romans. Halacha Gimel. Hagoyim ha-metzikim li-Yisrael. In the case of Goyim, who give difficulties, who torture and frighten the Yidden, and they make efforts to kill the Yid. They threaten to kill him. Until they redeem themselves from this guy, and they redeem themselves through taking their home or their field and giving it to the one that's forcing them, giving it to the one that's threatening them. That's the way they redeem themselves. The guy says, either you give me your field or your house, or I'll kill you. And then they will leave him alone. So what happened? The guy ends up with a field or a house. Now he leaves alone the Yid, and now he has a field or a house. However, how many houses can he use already? He'd rather have the money that he can use to spend on something else. So naturally he's going to sell it. When he wants to sell this piece of land, he's obviously going to sell it to the Jews, or at least in some cases will sell it to the Jews. The goyim would be able to take the houses by force, as was done at those times. So who's going to buy such a house or such a piece of land? The Yidden will buy such a piece of land. So the law is, im yesh b'yad ha-baylim likach min ha-metzik, if the original owner has enough money to buy the land back from the one that forced him, hein kedmin l'chol odom, they come before anyone else. Why? Because it originally was his field. Now he has lost it, and as a result of force, and he no longer has control over it. However, should he have money to be able to buy it back, the Jewish people ourselves make an allowance that he should have the first right to it, since it originally was his house or his field. However, if he does not have the ability to buy, he has no money. Or it has remained within the hand of the goy for a period of 12 months, which in this case it has become apparent that he is not going to sell it back to the original owner. In either of these cases, kol kedem, v'lokach mina meitzik zocha, anyone who can first buy this piece of land or this house from the goy who was forcibly taken it has the right to the land. And in this case, it is not a regular case of buying from a thief. Because if it was a regular case of buying from a thief, no one would be able to buy it from the thief. They would never have any rights to it. But in this case, the buyer from the goy does have a right to it. However, he must give back to the original owner of the field something. Not the whole field, but he must give him a quarter of the piece of land, of the tract of land, or a third of the value as paid for the field. How do we get this amount? Why does he have to compensate the original owner? The reason is clearly given in the Rambam. Mipnei shezeh ha-meitzik meicher bezul. This guy is going to sell the land cheaply. Hoyel v'karka sheina shalei hu meicher. Since he is selling land which is not his own, he is going to sell it for less money. So how much cheaper is he going to sell it? On the average, he's going to sell it at a discount of a quarter, 25%, or something close to it. Let's say the field was originally worth $400. He's going to make a quick sale and sell it for $300 or something around that. So this owner, let's say the Jew that buys from the goy, originally if he would have bought it from the original owner, he would have had to pay $400 for it. Now he is buying it from the goy who stole it, he's only paying $3. So how is he saving this $100? He's saving this $100 on the cheshbon, on the count of the original yid. This quarter that he is saving, that the goy has reduced from the price, this is really money which belongs to the original owner. It's as a result of the original owner's connection with the field that he's selling it cheaper. The only reason he's selling it, is because it doesn't belong to him. It really belongs to the original owner. So this $100 which was decreased, certainly this belongs to the original owner. Someone that buys from the goy for 30, he has to give 10 to the back to the original owner. Because if he bought it for 30, that means that the original value must have been 40 if he bought it for 30. Therefore, the difference, the 10, he must give to the original owners. Alternatively, he can give a fourth of the land back to the original owner. Because the same thing would apply. The whole land was worth 40. Since now he only paid 30 for it, he could give a quarter of the land, or the value of 10, what was originally worth 10, back to the original owner. And then he is able to keep the rest of it. If he does not give this 10, or he does not give the quarter of tract of land, then this quarter of tract that he is holding, it is as if he has stolen it from the original owner, since he is halachically required to give it back. The Gemara says, incidentally, that the choice is in the hands of the original owner. It's not clear from the Rambam here. But the Gemara says that the original owner has the right. Should he want to take the quarter of the land, he takes it. Should he want to have the 10, the value of the third of what the buyer paid, he can take that. It's his choice. It is not the choice of the one that buys from the goy. The remaining halachas in this chapter deal with the law of Hayeri Latzeich Sadeich Stechavere, someone literally that goes down to the field of his neighbor. Since in the Eretz Yisrael, the custom was that the high land would be used for the building of houses for security purposes, and the lower land would be used for planting. Therefore, the expression is used, someone that goes down into the field of one's neighbor. And we will discuss all different variations of whether he went down and used the field within the as a result of the owner giving permission, or whether he used the land without permission of the owner. to understand the next few halachas, we have to realize that there are some fields which are fit for grain, that they would be better planted and better produce grain or vegetables or something of the sort, whereas other sorts of fields would better handle trees. Halacha Dalet. Hayeirid l'seich steicha veirei shalei birshus. A person entered the field of his neighbor without his permission. Venata, and he planted a tree there. Im hayesas sade asuya lito. If it is a field which is fit for planting trees, and it would be better for trees than for grain, what do we do here? We calculate how much would a person give in order to have a tree planted in his field. For example, if in order to plant a tree in this field, he would pay $100, and somebody went without permission and planted the tree, we calculate it's $100. The one that went there without permission and planted this tree can take $100 from the owner of the field, since he would normally have paid anyway to have this tree planted, and the field is fit for trees, not for grain, then he has the right to take this money back from the owner. However, v'im eina asuya lita, if it is not a field which is fit for planting trees, you could plant trees there, but it would be better for grain. In such a case, shomin lei, we make a calculation, v'yodei ala tachteina, and the one that went there without permission and planted the tree, he is at a disadvantage. What does it mean he is at a disadvantage? The Rambam explained this in Perek Tes Halacha Hei. It means as follows. When a person plants a tree, it costs him a certain amount of money. He had to buy the tree, he had to rent a shovel, and so on. He had to put a certain amount of effort. This was his cost, his hetzos. In addition, there is the additional value which was added onto the field as a result of his planting this tree. Now, sometimes his investment was a good one, and the value will increase how much he had to invest. It could have cost him $50 to plant the tree, and now the field has increased in value $75. The owner, for example, would have paid $75 to have such a tree planted there. However, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. It would have cost him $50 still to plant the tree, but now the tree is only worth $25. Maybe only many years from now it'll be worth more. But right now it is only worth $25. In the first case, the shevach is more than the hetzah. The increase in value is more than the cost, the investment. In the second case, the hetzah is more than the shevach. The cost was more than the increase in value. The law is, which does the one that entered the field and planted the tree receive? Yodei ala tachteina, he is at the disadvantage. Which means, if the shevach is more than the hetzah, the total value is more than what he originally invested, all he gets back is his investment. If it cost him $50, he gets back $50. Any increase which came to the field as a result of his effort goes to the owner of the field. All he gets back is his investment. If alternatively it cost him more, and it cost him $50, and it only raised in value $25, all he's able to regain from the field is the $50 that it increased in price. Only the shevach can he get. And it cost him more money, he put in more money, more investment, then he loses that money, since he is at a disadvantage. He went into the field without permission, the field was not fit for trees, and therefore he is at the disadvantage, he will lose money in this deal. However, let's say in this field which is fit for grain, as the Magid Mishnah explains, this is going on the last part of the previous halacha. Let's say this field which was fit better for grain than it is for trees, the owner doesn't even want to leave the tree there. He wants him to uproot the tree and so he can plant grain over there. Omrle bal hasadeh. The owner of the field says, Akeri lancha, uproot your tree, valeich, and get out of here. Take your tree and leave. Shemilei, we listen to the owner of the field. Since the person went there without permission of the owner, he can tell him whatever he wants. Omar naiteya, hareini ekeri lani. But let's say the one that planted the tree says, I am going to uproot the tree. The owner would rather say, leave your tree, and I'll pay you for what you put into it. But let's say, alternatively, the owner of the field says, okay, leave the tree already. But the one that planted it says, I'm taking it. Ain't shaming, we don't listen to him. If the owner of the tree wants him to leave the tree there, he must leave it there. Mipnei shemachish hasakarka, because uprooting a tree after it has been planted will weaken the land. And the owner of the field has that, although he didn't originally plant the tree, once it has been planted, he has the right to preserve the strength of the field and to have the tree kept in place. Halacha vav. Hachatzeres harehen ra'uyus lebinyan. A courtyard is fit to have things built upon it. And to add on to the courtyard, new houses and aliyahs, multi-story houses, houses with a second floor, is aliyahs. And therefore, since a courtyard is fit to have trees built, to have houses built in it, this is just like the case, which we mentioned in Halacha Daled, a field which is fit to have trees planted in it. Therefore the Ga'enim, after the times of the Gemara, and after the times of the Rabbanis Averoi, before the generation of the Rishenim of the Rambam, they ruled, Shabbaini b'chatzar chaveray, shalemi daite, someone that built a house in his neighbor's courtyard without his permission, this is just like someone who plants a tree in a field which is fit for trees better than it is fit for a grain. And therefore the law is the same as that case we mentioned in Halacha Dalit. V'shomin like kama adam reitza litain, but we calculate how much would a person want, how much would he want to pay in order to have such a building built on his courtyard. However, this is only if he builds a structure which is a helpful structure, which is fit to that particular courtyard, as the custom is in that place. He cannot take a courtyard where people live and build a stable there. It has to be something which is fitting to the environment. And this can be seen as an early zoning law. The only time he is allowed to build something there, and it can be considered to be something helpful, is when it fits the environment and it fits the normal uses that such a courtyard is put to. Halacha Zayin. Hayeded l'stei chavero b'rishus. Someone that goes to his friend's field with his permission. Up till now, we've been speaking about him going without permission. But let's say he gets permission. Even if he planted a tree in a field which is normally used for grain, it is not so fit for planting trees. But he got permission to plant a tree from the owner. In such a case, in this case, we calculate the value of what he planted, and his hand has the advantage. In the previous case, when we mentioned in Halacha Daled, since he went without permission, Yado ala tachteina, but now Yado ala yena, his hand is at the advantage. And the Rambam explains, Shem ha yisera al hashevach, if his investment, the cost of the planting, was more than the increase in value, Naito ha, in that case, he takes the investment. And let's say it cost him $100 to plant a tree, but it increased the value of the field only by $50. His investment was not a good one. In such a case, since he went with the permission of the owner of the field, he gets back his entire investment. The owner of the field must pay him back the $100. And although the field is now only worth $50 more, the $50 is lost by the owner of the field since he gave him permission to plant the tree. Ve'im ha-shevach yeser al ha-hetzah, if the increase in value is more than the investment, neitel ha-shevach, in that case, the one that planted the tree takes the additional value. If it cost him again $100 to plant the tree, but now it has increased in value by $150, then he takes the entire $150. He always has the advantage. U'bal b'nichse ishtei, a husband, in regard to his wife's possessions, which she had before they were married, vashutaf besade sheyesh lechelikba, and a partner in a field which he has a hand in, that he has partial possession of this field, created bereshushein. They are considered like someone going with the permission of the owner. The husband is like he's going with the permission of his wife, improving the field, and one partner is making an improvement as if he has the permission of the other. since there's such a partnership, either the partnership of a husband and wife, or two financial partners, are inherently giving the other one permission to do what they think is best for the improvement of the property. And therefore, v'shamin lahem v'yodam alu el yena. You make the same calculation, and they get to have the advantage that they should not lose as a result of their investment, as we explained in the first half of this halacha. The next halacha deals with a case where it's not purely shalei bereshus and not purely bereshus. Originally, the person came and built or planted the tree without permission of the owner. However, after it was planted, the owner did something to indicate that he is pleased that this was built or planted. And therefore, in that sense, it's a reshus. How do we look upon such a situation? Halacha ches. Hayeded l'sdecha veira shalei bereshus. Someone that went to the field of his friend without his permission, venota, aibana, and he planted something, or planted a tree, or built something there. And this shalei bereshus. And as we learned in Halacha Dalet, it should be yado ala tachteina. He should be at a disadvantage. However, va'achakach bo bala sade. Afterwards came the owner of the field, v'hishlim binyan, and he built on to the building which was already started there, or he did something to guard that which was planted. He built a fence around it or something, or something similar, which shows that he is pleased, that he is satisfied with what this person did, and it is pleasing to him. He agrees with this which was done, because he used what the other person built, and built upon it, or he guarded this that he planted. In such a case, although the person originally came there without permission, and therefore it should be yado al tachteina, shomi levi yado al hol yena, we make the calculation, and the one that came there to build originally, or came there to plant, has the advantage that since the owner has shown that he is happy with this improvement and addition made to his field, or his courtyard, it is as if he gave the person permission to come there, and therefore yodo al hal yena, as we explained in the previous halacha. This next halacha corresponds to what we learned in halacha hay. In the case where someone came to a field which was fit for grain, and he planted a tree there, we said yodo al tachteina, he went there shalei bereshus. Let's say the owner of the field tells him to take his tree away, then he is required to take the tree away. However, the one that planted the tree says, I want to take it away. We do not allow him without the owner's permission, because taking out the tree will weaken the land. Halacha tes. A similar case. A person went to the broken down building, a deserted, abandoned building of his friend, and he built up this deserted building without permission of the owner. We make an estimation about how much he invested, and then his hand is on he has the lower hand. He is at a disadvantage, and he takes the lesser amount, the improvement that was put in, or the amount of his investment. Vim omer bala binyan, eitzai vavane ani neitel. And if the one that built up this house, the one that went there without permission to build up the churva, says, I'm going to take back my trees and the stones that I put in to build, we said in halacha hey, that if it was the case of a field, he is not allowed to, because it's going to weaken, it weakens the earth, which as Rashi explains in such a case, that as a result of the tree being put over there, he's taken some of the nourishment out of the ground. Therefore, he is not allowed to take away the tree. However, over here, but by his shamile, in this case over here of a house, shamile, he is allowed to do so because he is not going to weaken anything by taking away the materials. But the house was wrecked before, and it's going to be wrecked when he takes out whatever additions he added. However, basade, if this churva is in the middle of a field, ain't shaming like, we do not allow him to take away the improvements he has made. This will also weaken the ground. The Rambam apparently is learning that, although Rashi and the other Mefarshim learn differently, Basada means if this churva, this abandoned building, was standing in the middle of the field, and somehow as a result of taking away what he has built in this building, this will end up weakening the ground to some extent. The Mefarshim ask what sort of weakening will be done, but nevertheless the Rambam holds that the statement of the Gemara is referring to an actual weakening of the land, and therefore he is not allowed to do it. However, Omer le bala karka, tul mashaba nisa. If the owner of the land tells him, take out this that you have built, shamingly. In this case, we listen to him, and in this case, he takes out those materials which he has put into the building in the first place. The next two halachas speak about the law of Shavua, about taking an oath. As we have learned on previous occasions, there are a number of different types of oaths. There is a Shavuas Heses, which is a rabbinically decreed oath. A case in which one has to take only a Shavuas Heses, or this rabbinic oath, is a case of Kefer Hakel. When two people have a disagreement, one claims the other one owes him money, and the other one denies it, you can take a Shavuas Heses. Since he denies the entire claim, he takes an oath by rabbinic decree. On the other extreme, there are certain oaths, Shavuas, which one must take by Torah law. Such as the case of Shavuos HaShemrin, the various watchmen that were indicated in Chumash, who if they claim that an object has been stolen or has been lost in certain cases, then they can take an oath and are thereby exempt from payment for the object which they were watching. In this case, they must hold a Sefer Torah, a Torah scroll, which is known as an oath b'nekitas chefes, through holding a holy object, since it is an oath of the Torah. There are other cases in which our sages have decreed that one must take an oath. However, they make it ka'ein shel teira, similar to an oath as decreed by the Torah. And one must also hold a holy object when taking this oath. Such a case is when they have decreed in such a case as when one is taking an oath, and based on that oath, we will take money and give it to them. In such a case, our sages made it ka'ein shel teira. Now we will see which of these oaths apply in the cases we have been discussing. Halacha Yud. Kol Misha Shomin Lei, anyone that we have estimated to him, how much money is going to come to him. Bein Sha'ayisa Yadu El Ol Yena, whether his hand was on top, he was at the advantage, because he went into his friend's field with his permission, as we mentioned in Halacha Zayin. Bein Sha'ayisa Yadu El Ol Tachteina, or regardless of whether he was at the disadvantage, since he went there without permission, and he planted something which was not fit for the field, as in Halacha Dalit. In any of these cases where he is going to receive some money from the owner of the field, Eina Neitel Klum Asheyishba Menakitus Chefetz Kama Haitzi. He gets no money whatsoever until he takes an oath when he is holding an object, meaning a holy object such as a Sefer Torah, and he makes an oath as to how much money he spent. He must swear as to the amount he spent in making this improvement on the field. There is, however, a way he can avoid taking the oath and nevertheless get the money. Vim Omer Yaveo Adayonim. If he says, let's bring the judges here, the Yasu Shumas Hayitza, and let the judges make their calculation about how much it cost me to bring these improvements to the field. He claims this is right open, revealed before their eyes. They can figure it out just by looking. The Yesharu Ha'etzim Va'avonim Va'asid, they calculate the worth of the wood and the stones and the cement, the lime which was used for building. V'schar Ha'umnin, and also the wages of the people that worked for building this house. And they make their estimation, but pacha shebeshaorim, with the lowest of prices, the lowest wage which is paid for such a worker, and the lowest price at which one can obtain wood, and so on. In such a case, shemin lei, we listen to the one who made the improvement, v'neito b'loi shvua, and he is allowed to take the money from the owner of the field even without taking the oath. Because the only reason we make an oath in such a case is because there is some doubt as to whether to believe him or not. Since in this case it's something we can determine ourselves, and the judges actually do make this determination, why should we make him take an oath? If he is willing to settle for the lower amount, the absolute minimum cost for any of these materials, without taking the oath, we listen to him and allow him to take this lower amount, and he does not have to take an oath. The Kain Zesha Neitel HaShevach Bilvad. V'hoyesa Yodo Alo El Yena. And so too, in a case when the additional value of the field was more than the amount he spent, and he was at the advantage as a result of his making the improvement in the field with the permission of the owner, as we learned in Halacha Zayin, that if the additional value of the field is more than the expenditure in making the improvement, then he gets the shevach, the additional value. In such a case, ein tzarich shvuah, he doesn't have to take an oath, because the additional value of the field is something we can see for ourselves. We don't need him to tell us how much more the field is worth. We make the estimation ourselves. He is no more believed than anyone else, and therefore he does not need an oath in order to get money in such a case, since we are not dependent on his statement. Halacha Yud Aleph. Kol sheshomin lei v'neito. Any case in which we make an estimation for somebody, and then he takes money. And now there is a dispute as to whether the person gave or not. Shaton bala sodeva omar nasati. The owner of the field said, you made the estimation, and I had to give him, and I gave him already. Vayeded lasode aimer lo natalti. The one that went there to the field who should be have been given the money by the owner says, I didn't get any money. So there's a dispute over here. In a normal case of dispute, we could just make a shvuas heses, a rabbinic oath, and that's the end of it. But over here, we have a reason to believe the one who planted in the field. Hayeret neman. Over here, the one who made the improvement on the field is believed. V'nish b'shalo nosan leklum, he makes an oath that he did not receive anything v'neito, and he is allowed to take the money. Normally, we would make the, in a normal situation of kefir hakel, we would make the owner, one who completely contradicts the other one's claim. We would make the one who owns the field take an oath, a shvuas heses, that he already gave the money, and that would be the end of it. Since we have no reason to believe one more than the other, we make him take an oath, and all money stays where it is. But over here, we believe the one who made the improvement in the field, as long as he takes a shvuah, of course, and then he can take the money out of the hands of the owner of the field. Shahare Aimin Labala Sade, because we tell the owner of the field, Adayin Lashomaloch. We have not made an estimation yet of how much you are required to give. And you do not yet know how much you're required to give. How could you give? We haven't even figured out how much you're required to give. So why should we believe you to say you gave? You don't even know how much to give. So in that case, we do not determine like a regular law of kefir hakol, and we allow the one who made the improvement in the field to take out the money as long as he takes an oath. Avalim shomule. But if we have already made the estimation, va'omru labala sadatainle, and we tell the owner of the field to give the one that made the improvement the money, and later on the dispute develops, va'omru nasati, and then he says, I already gave. In such a case, afo pisha adayin lo nishba hayeded, even though the one that made the improvements in the field has not yet taken an oath, Haribala Sodeneman, the owner of the field is believed. Vayishbashvuas Heses Shanasan. He takes a rabbinic oath that he has given Vayifter, and he is already potter, he is exempt from anything else. Shakarka Bacheskas Palah, that land is always assumed to be in the owner's possession, and therefore anyone who wants to take out money from the owner of this field as a result of improvements which are made in the field, he must prove his case. Therefore, since he has not proven his case, and there is no reason to believe that the one who owns the field is lying, since the calculation has already been made, unlike the first part of this halacha, therefore, he is allowed to take a rabbinic oath, and like any other case of kefir hakol, he is exempt from further payment. The final halacha of the perek deals with the law of an aris. Arisin. An aris is someone who has been hired to work the land, to work on the field, and in exchange for his work in harvesting and planting the field, he is given a certain percentage of the crop, a third or a fourth, or whatever the custom is in that place. Halacha Yud Beis. Baal shahirid arisin benichse ishte. The husband has land, is taking care of his wife's land. His wife came into the marriage with a certain amount of land, which has nichsim alug, he has the right to eat the fruit from this field. In order to he takes care of the field for his wife, and therefore he hires arisin, people who will work the field, and in exchange, they are expecting a third or a certain portion of the fruits that are harvested. However, now something else happened. The husband was the one that fired them, but the field belongs to his wife. and now the connection between them splits. V'achakach gersha. And before the harvest comes and the workers are paid, they divorce. So the field now goes to the wife's possession. But the question is now, does the agreement which was made with the arisin, does this still apply? Because they made the agreement with the husband. And the husband didn't own the field. He only had rights to the fruits of the field. Therefore, do they have the right to the full amount as they originally agreed to? Or do they only get back the investment that they made in the field, paid for their time? So the law is, it depends on the husband himself. Was the husband himself also acting like an oris? Was he also working the field? Was he also knowledgeable in the laws of an oris? If that is the case, then the husband himself could have worked on the field anyway. And if the husband himself was working on the field, and it is as if he went into his wife's field without permission, so to speak. He would only get paid in the case of divorce. He would only be paid yado ala tachtena. He would only be compensated for whichever is less, the amount of shavach, the amount of improvement in the land, or for the haitzahs, the amount that he paid, that he invested in his work in the field, whichever is less. And since the baal himself would only get that much, the workers are no better than him. Since they were dependent on him, they made the agreement with him. By them also yado ala tachteina. Ima bal atzma oris, if the husband himself was also an oris, working in the field and knowledgeable in the laws of arisus, nistalik bal nistalko arisuf. As soon as the husband is removed from the field, so too the arisim, the people that he hired that are working on the field also are removed from the field. Shelo yordulo ela al das habal. The only reason they came was based on their connection with him. And therefore, v'shomim lahem v'yodam ala tachteina. We make an estimation for them, and their hand, they have the lower hand. Meaning we determine which is less, the amount that they invested, the amount of time that they worked on the field, or the amount of increased value the field has as a result of that work. Whichever is less, that's what they get, because that's all the Baal himself would get. V'im ein ha-baal oris, but if the Baal himself, the husband, was not an oris, he was not acting as one of the workers himself, then why did they go into the field? They went into the field for the sake of the woman, and it was just the husband that was arranging the deal, and it is as if they are working for her. And therefore, al-das ha-karka yordu, they went there to work for the land. They weren't working for the husband, helping him out. They were working for the land itself to work it, and therefore, it is as if they're working for her. And therefore, we make an estimation and give them their pay as they normally would as a hired hand. Incidentally, we pointed out in Halacha Zayin that a husband in his wife's possessions is considered as one that is yeded l'stei chavero birishus, as someone that goes into one's neighbor's field with permission, and therefore the law is yado al ha'olyena, that his hand is on the up, he has the upper hand. Why here do we say that the husband is on the gets the has the lower hand, is at a disadvantage? The Kesef Mishnah explains, based on the explanation of the Rashba and the Rava Magid, that over there in Halacha Zayin we were speaking when he marries a woman who was underage. And it is a case of a girl who was an orphan, her father has died. If the father gave her away as a bride, they would be fully married, and should they wish to terminate the relationship, it can only be through a divorce, through a get, that the husband gives. It is up to him. However, in this case, it's a different sort of marriage. It's not a total marriage. Her mother or her older brother has given her away in marriage, and the law is she is allowed to do miyun. She is allowed herself to reject the marriage when she grows up, and they don't even need a writ of divorce. In such a case, our sages established that the husband should have yado al yena, he should be at advantage, since he will be reluctant to do anything for his newly found young wife's possessions, because she could always say, I don't want you as a husband, so why should he go to great trouble? So therefore our sages enacted that his should be yado al yena. But a regular case when he marries a fully grown woman, the regular law is, as we said here in Halacha Yud Beis, yado al tachteina.